This is the Steve Callis Show on SportsTalkNetwork.com. You can call us at 440-579-2531. Send us an email at studio@sportstalknetwork.com or follow us on Twitter at SportsTalkNet. The Steve Callis Show on SportsTalkNetwork.com starts now.
Hello again, everybody. This is Steve Callis on The Steve Callis Show. It's Monday, June 18th, 2012. I encourage you to send your emails to studio@sportstalknetwork.com. That's studio@sportstalknetwork.com. Go right down to South Beach for last night's, I thought, pivotal game three between Oklahoma City and Miami. Interesting game. Miami comes out on top, 91-85. Kevin Durant now showing a propensity to get into foul trouble. Happened again for the second straight game, and you could argue that was the key to the game. I would argue it was that with a combination of Russell Westbrook actually being taken out of the game because he did. Now, we've had this conversation, Westbrook responding to criticism, which, of course, he shouldn't say anything. He should just play. So I'm not going to change my game. Obviously, he is not a point guard. He's more of a two-guard playing the point. He was a two in college. They could use a point guard who plays like a point guard. But this guy is so talented. Yesterday, only two turnovers, but he had a number of bad possessions in the third quarter. And I don't know if Scott Brooks made a mistake. Obviously, I've praised him for some of the moves he made, especially putting Cephalosha on Tony Parker in the San Antonio series, which I think literally changed the game around. Once he put him in, once he put him on Parker, they won game three and they went on to win the series. But when you have Durant on the bench with four fouls and you take Westbrook out for some poor plays, then they were really in trouble. And actually, it was almost, I don't know if they fooled Brooks, but they actually moved the lead up from 6 to 10 when Westbrook came out, but then they gave it all back. The game was decided, I thought, towards the end of the third quarter when Miami goes on a 15-3 run to totally wipe out the Oklahoma City 10-point lead on the road. And then Miami was able to get a couple of big baskets late. LeBron with a big basket. He also made one of two free throws when he needed them. He needed to make one of two. And then very down way late, the last minute and a half, after Russell had hit a jumper to cut it to one, Bosch made two free throws, and then Durant just took an awful shot. And Durant usually doesn't take awful shots, but he took like a runner from, I'll say, 7 or 8 feet away that didn't even hit the rim. It hit the backboard and glanced over to the other side of the basket. He was coming down the right side, took one of those runners that he takes and can make, but he just didn't have the right angle. It hit the backboard and bounced on the other side of the basket, didn't even hit the basket. Then Westbrook had a wide-open three to tie. And, you know, it's interesting because he kind of hesitated, and that's when you're really lost. He who hesitates is lost. Westbrook, it was like he was thinking too much, had a wide-open three to tie, very late, missed it. They foul LeBron. He makes one of the two to put them up four with, like, 12 or 14 seconds left. And then there was a complete mix-up between Cephalosha and Westbrook. As Cephalosha tried to give Westbrook a bounce pass in the corner, Westbrook decided he was going to come up to the closer to the half-court line to try and get the ball, and Cephalosha bounced past it right to Dwayne Wade. Game over, Miami 91, Oklahoma City 85. And my point, it's kind of hard, although Westbrook did make some dumb plays, it's kind of hard to have Durant and Westbrook out of the game, especially when Harden hasn't been Harden. 2 for 10 yesterday, 9 points. I thought Derek Fisher gave them a huge lift, as he did against San Antonio. 2 for 3 from three, 9 points, including a 4-point play. I mean, that's pretty amazing. Derek Fisher still getting it done on the court. Again, I thought he was going to be a leader off the court, which he has been, but he's also been on the court. But look, Oklahoma City has Derek Fisher, championship point guard, Mo Cheeks, maybe a Hall of Fame point guard, Scott Brooks, the coach, Mo Cheeks, an assistant, Scott Brooks, a very good point guard. But you don't want to, you know, you're in a tough spot with Russell Westbrook. because I'm sure he's stubborn. Durant supports him totally. He took 18 shots yesterday. Durant took 19. Durant should always take more shots. The gap should be greater, in my opinion. But if Harden's 2 for 10, you don't really have a third scorer. So Westbrook has to take it upon himself to score. I think he's got the best pull-up jumper in basketball. It's all, you can't guard him. He takes two steps to the basket. He's so quick you think he's going. He pulls up. He has open looks from 14, 16, 18 feet, and he can knock them down. But again, I think he's the wild card. I think people will point to Harden and criticize him incorrectly. But I think it's Westbrook. As we talked about before the series, if Westbrook plays great in five games, Oklahoma City is going to win the championship. I would say after three, he played great in game one, and he played just so-so the other two games, even if his numbers, you know, I heard Stephen A. Smith say he was pathetic in game two as a point guard. I wouldn't go that far. I know what he's saying, but I wouldn't go that far. This guy is unbelievably talented, and he had seven assists in game two. But yesterday, LeBron with another excellent game, 29 points, 14 rebounds, 3 assists, 11 for 23 from the field, 44 minutes. Wade also was very good, didn't shoot it great, but was a key factor. Stat stuffer, 25 points, only shot 8 for 22, but 25 points, 7 rebounds, 7 assists, 2 steals. Give him a lot of credit. Bosch early on the pick and roll with Wade. Wade had 4 assists in the first quarter, very important. It looked like Oklahoma City made a concerted effort to get out to the 3-point line where Battier had really hurt them. To shut off the 3, the problem with that, of course, is when Bosch set the pick and roll with Wade, Wade came off the pick. Bosch went to the basket early on. He had a couple of easy baskets. Bosch was terrible from the field. He was 3 for 12. I know at least 2 of them were dunks, maybe all 3 of them were dunks. But he had 10 points, and he did have 11 rebounds. He did have a couple of blocks. So everybody kind of did their part. Battier didn't have 17, but he was 2 for 2 from 3. He did have 9 points and 3 rebounds. Chalmers wasn't very good. I think he's going to have to pick it up a little. But again, James Jones had 6, including a 3. Battier had 9, including 2 threes. They just need enough, and they had done it enough in the prior game for Oklahoma City to go out and get them. That opened up the inside for Bosch. That was allowing James and Wade to slash to the basket. Again, if you watch the game in the first half, almost all of their baskets, almost all of Miami's baskets were inside, drives, post-ups. Clearly, that's what they wanted to do. Oklahoma City changed that around, and again, they wound up taking a 10-point lead in the second half. But it wasn't enough. Miami rolls back. You got to think, you know, we talked about this before. Oklahoma City kind of climbing that ladder. This is their finals. The Heat's ladder started last year at the NBA Finals. So they have a little more experience. They have a little more age. They've been there before. I think that's showing a little bit. Now, I don't think the Heat can beat Oklahoma City 3 times in a row. In Miami. You know, it's a big debate. I think 2-3-2 helps Oklahoma City tremendously. If it was 2-2-1-1-1, I think you'd like the Heat in Game 6 at home. As you know, at the beginning of the series, I picked the Heat in 6 on the road just because I don't think they're going to win the next 2 games in Miami. Can they? Yeah, I guess they can. Will they? I don't think so. But they're going to have to find a way, Durant and company, to win on the road. They certainly had a good chance yesterday. And I don't know if Scott Brooks made a mistake. Once you go up 10, you obviously want to keep Durant out with 4 fouls. Westbrook, I'm not sure. I agree he had to be taken out. He was hurting them. He only had 2 turnovers, but he made a number of bad plays. He missed a couple of guys. He took a couple of bad shots. This is what Westbrook is. And on the one hand, you love his ability and his athleticism and his talent and his stubbornness. But on the other hand, long term for this guy, he's going to have to learn to play like a point guard, or else they're going to have to go get a point guard and move Westbrook to the 2. So we'll have to see how that goes, but give Miami a lot of credit. Miami 91, the Thunder 85. And again, that's with Bosch only scoring 10, Battier scoring 9, but LeBron and Wade combined for 54 points. Their defense was very, very good, holding Oklahoma City to 85. And while Durant did get it going, he didn't quite get it going the way he has in other games. So Miami takes the lead, 2-1. You have to think they're going to get at least one of the next two. Again, some people think it's not such a big deal, 2-3-2. I do. And some people think Miami can win three in a row at home. I don't. But we'll see. Obviously, game four, very important to Oklahoma City. Because if they get to game four, they know they're going home. If they win game four, they know they're going home. So it's important to Miami, under the theory of trying to win in five. I don't think they can do it. I think these teams are too close. But Miami gets the win, 91-85. Oklahoma City has to shoot better from three. Only 4-for-18 yesterday. And that's with Derek Fisher hitting 2-for-3. So Durant and Westbrook combined only 2-for-8. And the rest of the team, of course, 0-for-7. But I don't know if you expect really Cephalosha to make a 3 or Daquan Cook to make a 3. You do expect Harden to make a 3, but he's had a lot of problems in this series. 2-for-10 yesterday, 0-for-4 from 3, 9 points. He did have 6 rebounds and 6 assists and 2 steals. And again, a lot of people are bringing up the refs now, as they did in the last game. It's very funny to see people actually debating the call between Durant and James at the end of game two. You know, James, the experienced superstar, Durant, the up-and-coming guy, Durant doesn't get the call. But I don't think it was that at all. If you watch Steve Javi, pretty interesting that Steve Javi is out there criticizing refs now, because he had thin skin as an official himself. But in any event, you can't have a debate over the call in game two when it seems pretty clear that the ref just didn't see it. If you saw the Javi thing on ESPN, he showed you how the ref was a little bit out of position, and there's no way from where he was standing could he have seen James's left arm against Durant's right side. And that's very important. But the block they called on Durant when James got out in the fast break in the fourth quarter for a driving layup score, basket good, and foul on Durant, and that was Durant's fifth foul, I think that was a good call. Durant is kind of sliding with LeBron. He's not there. He's not set. And, yes, you can get a charge if you're sliding, but you're not going to get a charge if you're kind of sliding over as LeBron is going to the basket and there's contact. So a bad game. Durant has to stay out of foul trouble. Yes, he has to check LeBron James. Yes, LeBron James is going to try and post up everybody now. He's had some success. And I won't even say it's almost backing him down. It's getting up in the post, squaring and turning, and either taking the jumper or putting it on the floor as he's facing the defender. This isn't like a big play, big man, a Kareem, backing him down with a hook shot or a Shaq. This is a guy who, yes, he's very powerful and he can do that, but that's not really his game. His game is turn and face the defender. He can make a move, and he's making the move from 10 feet instead of 20, 25 feet. Now, as for LeBron answering all his critics, I think the jury's still out. To me, yes, he has to win a championship, but he's also got to hit a big shot late in the game. Don't tell me when you make 2 foul shots when you're up 2 to make it 4, as he did in game 2, that's unbelievably caught shooting. Don't tell me when he makes 1 of 2 foul shots in the last 20 seconds when you're up 3 to make it 4. Are those big free throws? Absolutely, but don't tell me they're unbelievably clutch to win the game. Let me know when he's shooting 2 down 1, and more importantly, let me know when he takes a big 3 and makes it, or a big shot down 1, down 2, tied 10, 12, 15 seconds in the game. He hasn't made one of those. I don't know if he's ever made one of those, but he certainly didn't last year, and he hasn't this year. So there are a couple of things still for LeBron, but give him a lot of credit. He's the best player out there. I'll say it again, I still don't think he's the MVP. Because you got Dwayne Wade and Chris Bosh on your team. I think Durant's the MVP. Because Westbrook is up and down. Harden doesn't even start. He's up and down, especially in the playoffs. So I thought Kevin Durant was the MVP of the NBA regular season. I think LeBron James is the best player, but that's the difference. Happens in baseball all the time. They give the MVP to the most outstanding player, not to the most valuable player. A-Rod when he was on Texas and they won 70 games. The year after A-Rod left, they won like 85 games or something. I mean, it's ridiculous. But that's all irrelevant, who gets the MVP, who's the best player. It's who wins four games. And right now, Miami leads that series 2-1. I picked them in six. I'd be very confident if it was the other way around, if it was 2-2, 1-1, 1. For whatever reason, maybe travel reasons, they went 2-3, 2. It would be intelligent if they went back out of fairness to 2-2, 1-1, 1. Miami leads the series 2-1. They stay in Miami for the next two games. This is the Steve Kallis Show. We're at SportsTalkNetwork.com.
Great job, guys. We just got certified loose slots by Las Vegas Advisor.
Yeah, but George, we're so tired.
We've been giving out so much money, and look, Jackpot's arm hurts because of all the pulls.
Well, guys, don't do it for me. Do it for our guests. Get back out there.
All right.
All right? Hands in.
Palm slots pay lots.
Palm slots are certified up to 36.85% looser than the Las Vegas Strip and local jurisdictions by the Las Vegas Advisor.
With nearly 30 years of experience in the electrical surplus and distribution business, Supply Line Electric has now taken its business onto the internet with a completely automated website for inventory control and order entry. Specializing in Square D, Eaton Cutler Hammer, Siemens Automation, Banner Engineering, ASCO Valves, Bussmann and Faraz Fuses, and coming very soon are more than 5,000 line items of Allen Bradley. SupplyLineElectric.com, your 24/7 distributor of electrical, motor control, and automation parts.
This is WWE Superstar The Big Show.
This is Edge.
This is Stacey Keebler.
What up? This is John Cena. You're logged on.
We're logged on.
And you're logged on to Sports Talk.
Sports Talk.
Sports Talk.
Sports Talk Network.com. Get your NBA news when you want it, 24/7, online and on demand. SportsTalkNetwork.com. Your cities, your teams, your passion.
Want to know what's going on in the world of professional wrestling and sports entertainment?
It's still real to me, damn it!
Join Paul Belfi and Mike Pitak.
You are a freaking lunatic!
For Pro Wrestling Insider.
Awesome!
On SportsTalkNetwork.com.
Every day, nearly 3,000 families enter into foreclosure and face losing their home. If you're currently behind on your mortgage, you can still avoid foreclosure. You can save your home, but you need to act now. We're Allied State Foreclosure Services. We're experts in saving homes from foreclosure. With just one phone call to us, you can stop the foreclosure process, lower your monthly mortgage payments, and save your home. Call now. The call is free with no obligation. 1-800-603-8308. Call us if you've been threatened with foreclosure, denied loan modification, or missed a payment on your mortgage. If you've been a victim of a predatory loan or are upside down on your mortgage, even if you've lost your job and you're worried about losing your home, don't wait. Call us now and let us help you save your home. You've worked hard to build a life with your family. Let us help you keep your home. Call now before it's too late. 1-800-603-8308. 1-800-603-8308. 1-800-603-8308.
This is a referral service. Calls will be routed to an independent referral insurance agency.
Listen up, America!
Listen up, America. I'm talking to anyone with or without a pre-existing medical condition. A health insurance hotline has now been established to provide health insurance for all Americans, even uninsured Americans with pre-existing conditions. Call now for a free, no-obligation quote on affordable health plans available to you. 1-800-690-6110. I repeat, this is a hotline providing free quotes for affordable health plans. It's for anyone without health insurance, even if you have pre-existing conditions. Medical costs are the number one cause of bankruptcy and financial distress. All uninsured Americans are strongly urged to call this National Health Insurance Hotline right away to protect yourself and your family from an unexpected variety of medical costs that could cause financial hardship. Call the Health Insurance Hotline right now for a free quote at 1-800-690-6110. That's 1-800-690-6110. Call 1-800-690-6110.
Blue Zoo Radio with Frank Reese. Sunday nights at 8 p.m. only on SportsTalkNetwork.com.
Welcome back to the show on SportsTalkNetwork.com.
Yeah, we're back
on
the Steve Callis Show. The other big story yesterday, besides Game 3 of the NBA Finals, was the U.S. Open, a major in golf, of course, and it was surprising Webb Simpson, who really didn't get a lot of play during the weekend, winds up shooting 68-68 in the last two rounds, and those were unbelievable rounds, given that nobody could finish the tournament under par. Webb Simpson winds up winning the U.S. Open, plus one for the 4 days, had a string of three birdies, which was unbelievable, at 6, 7, and 8, had four birdies out of five holes. Jim Furyk had to come back to the pack and did. Surprisingly, Jim Furyk, one of the most consistent golfers you'll see, but he was, in his own words, terrible the last three holes. He had no birdies and four bogeys for the final round. It really was his to win or his to lose, and he said that himself. He was obviously very frustrated. He hit some bad shots in the last few holes to fall to 3 under. He didn't even finish tied for second. Going into the last hole with Webb Simpson sitting in front of a TV monitor, both Graham McDowell and Jim Furyk going to 18, if either or both of them birdied, there was going to be a playoff. But they both needed to birdie. Pars wouldn't be good enough. So McDowell hits his shot on the green. He's got like a 20-foot birdie putt. But Furyk hits his shot in the bunker. So he has to hole out from a bunker, which just wasn't going to happen. And he went for it, but, you know, it wasn't even close. McDowell's putt started left, stayed left. Apparently, the expert said that was a putt that was going to break left, if anything, and he thought it was going to break right. So he hit it left of the hole, and it never came back. Again, not even close to, you know, have a shot at having a playoff in the U.S. Open, which would have taken place today. So Webb Simpson was in the clubhouse and literally won the tournament sitting on a stool in the clubhouse watching as Jim Furyk surprisingly kind of imploded. And then neither Graham McDowell nor Jim Furyk could get a birdie on 18. I think Furyk wound up bogeying 18, which dropped him to plus three. Michael Thompson, who played well, and Graham McDowell finished plus two. They were tied for second. And Furyk was very disappointed. As for Tiger Woods, you probably know by now he fell off a cliff over the weekend. He was the leader after two rounds. But yesterday, you know, with a hope to make a run, which he could have if he played great, he bogeyed the first hole, he bogeyed the second hole, he bogeyed the third hole, double bogeyed the third hole, and after six holes, he was 6 under. So he never really had a chance. And I'll keep going back to what I think, and it's not necessarily right, but I just don't think he can recreate the atmosphere in which he was living when he won all those majors. Throw in age, divorce, swing, new caddy, new swing coach, another new caddy, another new swing coach. I think it's now become pretty clear that Tiger is a very good player. He's not Tiger Woods. And I, you know, we've talked about this for a year and a half now. I don't think he's ever getting to 19. But he did have the lead after two holes as they went into Saturday. And then he just played 8 over the rest of the tournament. Very disappointing. A couple of things about Simpson, though. It's not like he came out of nowhere to win. Yes, he was a surprising winner, but he was ranked 14th in the world. He was second on the money list in 2011. So at a minimum, it shows you he belongs. He was very humble after winning, said, you know, this is only my fourth or fifth major. I don't know how Tiger has 14. My knees were shaking. But he did play very well, again, to go 68-68 on a weekend where it was almost impossible to shoot under par, 70. And he won this tournament because he was able to make birdies in 4 out of 5 holes, which also seemed like an impossibility. Webb Simpson wins the U.S. Open. And there have been 15 different winners in the last 15 majors. In the last 9 majors, every winner has been a first-time major winner. And again, if Tiger was Tiger or near Tiger, he could come right back to the top. There's clearly no dominant golfer. Phil Mickelson, you know, give him credit, he made the cut, but he finished, I think, 14 over. essentially just playing the last two rounds, never really had a chance. The point is, there's no incredible golfer now. When you think of Palmer, Nicholas, for example, there's no great rivalry now. To me, that means it should be easier for Tiger to step up and win. Again, you got a different guy winning every major. And now, nine consecutive majors, that's over 2 years, obviously. Every guy who's won a major, it's his first major. So while Tiger has fallen way back, nobody's really stepped up. I mean, people said Rory McIlroy, but not really. And you have a lot of excellent young golfers. Certainly the fields are deeper, but you don't have those great rivalries. Assuming Tiger and Phil was a great rivalry, and that's open to debate, it doesn't exist anymore. So Tiger Woods, a major disappointment. It'll lead us to another major disappointment conversation in a minute in another sport. But Webb Simpson is the U.S. Open winner. That was played out in San Francisco. Again, with a stunning 68-68 over the weekend. He edges out Graham McDowell, who did have a birdie putt on 18 to force a playoff and missed it. Again, they said on the telecast he misread it. He hit it left thinking it was going to go right. The people who had watched 18 all weekend said that putt goes left. To me, it didn't go anywhere. He just hit it, I'll say, 6 inches left of the hole, and it finished 6 inches left of the hole, maybe seven, and, you know, maybe it broke slightly to the left. But clearly a misread, and a misread that cost him an opportunity, not a victory, but an opportunity to win a major. Graham McDowell, second at +2 for the tournament. Michael Thompson, second at +2 for the tournament, tied for second. And again, Webb Simpson wins the U.S. Open. Nobody could shoot par or below par for the four rounds. As for Tiger, I don't know. It's got to be some back to the drawing board. There's some bad articles written about him now, but I don't. People expect Tiger Woods to be Tiger Woods, and he shoots one good round, and they go nuts. He's in the lead after two, and it's like, oh, Tiger's back. I don't think Tiger's ever coming back to what Tiger was. I mean, I think even if you're a Tiger fanatic, you have to admit that now. Since he hit that fire hydrant down at the bottom of his driveway. But again, he can't recreate what he had. And I'm talking about off the course as much as on the course. Maybe more so. Okay, switch now. I was just talking about, we don't do a lot of NASCAR here, but the Sprint Cup race at Michigan yesterday was won by Dale Earnhardt Jr., the famous 88 car. You know, Dale Earnhardt Jr., because his name is Dale Earnhardt, has an incredible NASCAR following. He actually hadn't won in 4 years. And I don't think he was ever Tiger Woods in his sport. A lot of what he has comes from his father, although he certainly has had some great seasons. But he hasn't won in 143 races. Yesterday, he wins at Michigan. He leads for the last 30 laps. Tony Stewart, who had some, I think they were sarcastic, if not unkind words about Earnhardt, which we'll get into for in a minute. Tony Stewart finished second. But again, Dale Earnhardt, who has tons of fans because of his junior, because of his father, Dale Earnhardt Sr., 143 races without a win, almost 4 years to the day. But he finally wins a Sprint Cup event at Michigan yesterday. Now, afterwards, you know, and he was like, he says all the right things. He's very smooth, Dale Earnhardt. He's a smart guy. You know, I was thinking about all of my fans all over the world who were enjoying this victory with me. That's what I was thinking in the final lap when I knew I had won it. You know, that kind of stuff. And really, that's, I mean, look, that's the right thing to say. Yeah, some guy in, you know, North Carolina or Florida or Iowa or California or New York, you know, is at one with Dale Earnhardt because he finally won a race. Tony Stewart, actually, I don't know if he did it on purpose, but he threw some cold water over it. You know, we were just talking about the fourth anniversary of Dale not winning, and we were almost celebrating that he won 4 years ago this week, so I guess we can't celebrate that anymore. He essentially was saying, I think correctly, that, you know, Wow, the guy won his first race in 4 years. Whoop-de-doo. What's the big deal? Imagine if you did that with anyone other than Dale Earnhardt who hadn't won in 4 years. It's going to be the same for Tiger if he wins a major. Because, yes, Tiger has won. But he hasn't won a major, I think, in 3 years now. Again, all related to that Thanksgiving run into the fire hydrant. Maybe his wife after him with a golf club or not. So a lot of this stuff is based on reputation or past performance or who your father is, you know. You think golf is a meritocracy or NASCAR racing is a meritocracy, and it is. Because you don't win a race because your name is Dale Earnhardt. You don't win a golf tournament because your name is Tiger Woods. But when you've reached that level, and certainly Earnhardt Jr. is no Tiger Woods in his sport, but when you reach that level of fandom, it seems that the fans stick with you through thick and thin, and thick or thin, and good for them. But I think Tony Stewart's right. And again, we've talked about Tiger Woods for a couple of years now. I just don't think he's just not going to get back to where he was. As I've said before, can he win a tournament? Absolutely. Can he win a major? Yeah, he can win a major. Like, look, you got 9 different winners the last 9 first-time winners the last 9 majors. You've got 15 different winners the last 15 majors. So sure, Tiger Woods can win. Why? Because there's no Tiger Woods of old on the tour now. If some guy came up and was the next Tiger Woods, that guy doesn't exist, I understand. At least not now. But if some dominant player, not even Tiger dominant, but if some dominant player came on the scene now, I think that would essentially wipe out most of Tiger Woods' chances to get to 19. I don't think he's getting there. I've said that consistently for a couple of years now. I think there are so many people who hope he can get there. But frankly, I just don't think it's going to happen. So Tiger Woods collapses over the weekend. Dale Earnhardt Jr. gets his first NASCAR win in 143 races in 4 years. And a lot of people are happy about that, and a few people aren't. And I think, again, rightly so. I'm not a Tony Stewart fan, but he spoke the truth. Essentially, what are we getting so excited about? This guy won his first race in 4 years. Big deal. And I don't disagree with that at all. A few other miscellaneous things going on. The great LaDainian Tomlinson will today sign a one-day contract with the San Diego Chargers so he can retire as a Charger. I don't quite understand why that's so important to people, but hey, it's certainly his right. A fantastic running back, a surefire Hall of Famer, the number 5 leading rusher of all time, 2001 first-round pick of the Chargers out of TCU. And I'll give you this stat, but with a caveat. I mean, Tomlinson was great. He is a first ballot Hall of Famer. I totally agree with that. He tried to save the locker room in New York, and I don't think it worked out for him. He's the guy who said there was this rift between Sanchez and Santonio Holmes that may or may not have been now fixed up. Who knows? Tomlinson isn't there this year, but he was actually vocal about it, which I thought was surprising, but whatever. But here's the stat that you'll hear, and it's an amazing stat, but it comes with an asterisk, not because of Tomlinson, but because of the NFL and the way the season is. Tomlinson, in his 11 seasons, becomes the first guy in the history of the National Football League, put that in quotes, history of the National Football League, to go for 1,500 or more yards from the line of scrimmage, passing and rushing, and for 10 or more touchdowns. He did it 8 times in 11 seasons. A few other guys had done it 7. I know Walter Payton did it. I think there were a couple of Barry Sanders did it. But here's the problem, at least for me. And if you ever want to understand how great Jim Brown was, go look at his stats. You can't tell me greater than or equal to 1,500 yards, 10 or more touchdowns in 8 of 11 seasons in the history of football without telling people that Jim Brown originally played in a few 12-game seasons and then played in 14-game seasons. Jim Brown never played in a 16-game season. And if you go look at Jim Brown's records, and I encourage you to because they're unbelievable, when you look at Jim Brown's records, you heard, I think it was Curtis Martin became the first player ever to rush for 1,000 yards his first nine seasons. I remember thinking, man, how could Jim Brown have not rushed for 1,000 yards? And I went back and looked, and I think in his first year, he played 12 games and rushed for like 990 yards. You got to understand now, the NFL season is 25% more than it once was. It would be as if baseball players played over 200 games instead of 162 or 154 as it used to be. So I'm not taking away from how great Tomlinson was, but just have an understanding, if you played in a 12-game season, it would be virtually impossible to go over 1,500 yards and over 10 TDs every year, or 8 out of 11 years. If Jim Brown played in 16-game seasons, I think he would still have every record that there ever was. But take nothing away from Tomlinson. He's going to retire today as a Charger. He's going to sign a contract today. He's going to have a press conference today. And certainly in my mind, and I assume in the minds of most people, LaDainian Tomlinson is a first ballot Hall of Famer. This is the Steve Kallis Show. We're at SportsTalkNetwork.com.
Every day, nearly 3,000 families enter into foreclosure and face losing their home. If you're currently behind on your mortgage, you can still avoid foreclosure. You can save your home, but you need to act now. We're Allied State Foreclosure Services. We're experts in saving homes from foreclosure. With just one phone call to us, you can stop the foreclosure process, lower your monthly mortgage payments, and save your home. Call now. The call is free with no obligation. 1-800-603-8308. Call us if you've been threatened with foreclosure, denied loan modification, or missed a payment on your mortgage. If you've been a victim of a predatory loan or are upside down on your mortgage, even if you've lost your job and you're worried about losing your home, don't wait. Call us now and let us help you save your home. You've worked hard to build a life with your family. Let us help you keep your home. Call now before it's too late. 1-800-603-8308. 1-800-603-8308. 1-800-603-8308.
Follow SportsTalkNetwork.com on Twitter at SportsTalkNET.
Oh my God.
Shut the front door.
And now like us on Facebook at Facebook.com/SportsTalkNetwork. SportsTalkNetwork.com. Your cities, your teams, your passion.
Listen, if you're considering buying hardwood flooring, don't do anything until you've written down this number and received your free Lumber Liquidators catalog.
The flooring with high quality with an unbeatable price tag.
Call in the next 10 minutes to get your free catalog.
What I bought at Lumber Liquidators is a vastly higher quality than flooring I had installed 6 years ago, and for a fraction of the cost.
So if you want great hardwood flooring at unbeatable prices, trust Lumber Liquidators. We buy direct from the mills. Call right now to get our flooring guide and catalog absolutely free. It's filled with top quality hardwood flooring, including solid hardwoods, laminates, and bamboos, and even Bellawood pre-finished flooring with a 100-year transferable warranty. The same floor Bob Vila has in his home. This free catalog is full of tips, ideas, and our flooring project list to make your buying decisions easy. Hurry, call right now to get a copy of this free guide and catalog. Call 877-407-9413 to get your free copy now. 877-407-9413. 877-407-9413.
This is a referral service. Calls will be routed to an independent referral insurance agency.
Listen up, America!
Listen up, America. I'm talking to anyone with or without a pre-existing medical condition. A health insurance hotline has now been established to provide health insurance for all Americans, even uninsured Americans with pre-existing conditions. Call now for a free, no-obligation quote on affordable health plans available to you. 1-800-690-6110. I repeat, this is a hotline providing free quotes for affordable health plans. It's for anyone without health insurance, even if you have pre-existing conditions. Medical costs are the number one cause of bankruptcy and financial distress. All uninsured Americans are strongly urged to call this National Health Insurance Hotline right away to protect yourself and your family from an unexpected variety of medical costs that could cause financial hardship. Call the Health Insurance Hotline right now for a free quote at 1-800-690-6110. That's 1-800-690-6110. Call 1-800-690-6110.
Blue Zoo Radio with Frank Reese. Sunday nights at 8 p.m. only on SportsTalkNetwork.com.
Welcome back to the Steve Kallis Show on SportsTalkNetwork.com.
Yeah, we're back on the Steve Callis Show. One more note before we get to the baseball interleague play again over the weekend, and that is right now today in New York City, the four suspended New Orleans Saints are appealing their suspensions. Again, it's bizarre to me because Roger Goodell makes the decision and then Roger Goodell hears the appeal. Very interesting now because you don't know if this will become a spitting contest. I'm the commissioner. You should have taken what I gave you. Or if he's going to bend a little. The problem, if he bends a little, and I'm not saying he should or shouldn't, but if he bends a little, then you're going to have an appeal on every suspension in the history of the world, and that's the problem. So I don't think the appeal should be to Roger Goodell. I think it should be to an independent arbitrator. But again, these commissioners are very powerful people. They have that best interest in the sport that's usually upheld by the courts. I think Goodell is being sued in court for defamation by Jonathan Vilma. But they must have the NFL must have some pretty strong evidence that Vilma himself did put bounties on players, did say he would give X dollars for whatever. Now, the flip side of that, of course, is a lot of people say it happens on a lot of teams all the time. It just didn't seem to be as institutionalized. The defensive coordinator ran the program, and the coach knew about the program, and obviously the defensive players knew about the program. So those appeals are being heard today, and I don't think it has anything to do with the content. I think it has more to do with whether Goodell is going to let his power be chipped away at. And I think for the most part, the answer to that is probably going to be no. I mean, look, the NFL is now petrified about their exposure or their potential exposure on the whole concussion issue. And then you have this story come out over the last 6 months that the New Orleans Saints had a bounty program in place. And I don't think anyone denies that there was a bounty program in place. It's more about who put the program in place? What was the actual players' involvement? I thought the players were all going to take the position, and maybe they will today. I'm just taking orders. You know, the man tells me to do this. Well, what do you want me to do? Not do it? I'll get cut. So they're in that tough position, the players. Now, Sean Payton? No. Defensive coordinator? Joe Vitt? No. They seem to Greg Williams. Now, Joe Vitt is going to be the coach. He got six games. Williams suspended indefinitely. He's no longer with New Orleans. Payton, of course, got the year. So I think there's still a lot there, but I at some point it becomes a spinning contest. Roger Goodell says, I'm the commissioner. I give you this punishment. You should have taken it. And if you're going to fight me, I'm going to deny it. And if you're going to take me to court, I'm going to fight that. It's hard to sue the guy for defamation and then walk in and appeal your 1 year suspension, which is what Vilma got. He was the most penalized player. I was surprised they gave him that much myself, but again, they must have some very strong evidence that Vilma did something wrong more so than the other players to give him a year. And that's what he got. But look, you're a football player. Your career is short. You're losing a lot of money. You know, I don't see how he could take it lying down, and obviously he's not. So we'll see what happens today in New York. My sense is they're going to be denied. And we'll just have to wait and see what happens. Two legal notes, and then we'll get to the baseball quickly. Clemens' case goes back to the jury, I think, tomorrow. They had a three-day weekend because someone had some commitment or something. But that case is in the hands of the jury. As I wrote, it's up at sportstalknetwork.com. You know, I think he's going to get convicted of something. And according to what this judge said during the very brief first trial, essentially if he gets convicted, he's going to do some time. Maybe that thought will change, but I certainly think he's going to be convicted on at least the obstruction of Congress count, maybe other counts. I think Clemens is going to be a convicted felon. We'll have to wait. And on the Sandusky trial, which is as disgusting and morbid as they come, victim after victim came in, but the government rested its case quickly. The defense may or may not mount an insanity defense. The lawyer did tell the jury during opening statements that Sandusky is going to take the stand. Again, you got to wonder, what's he going to say? It's all been a big misunderstanding. I love children, but not that way. I like to help little boys, but not that way. I mean, just bizarre. He had the perfect setup for a pedophile to take advantage of boys with that Second Mile charity that he founded or co-founded. I mean, really, just disgusting. And you had a lot of people, a lot of courageous people, some of them still as young as 18 or 23, get on the stand and state in graphic detail what Jerry Sandusky did to them. And if it's true and if a jury believes it, they should, again, lock the door and throw away the key on this guy. He walks around like it's a big misunderstanding. It's all a big miscommunication. And again, as I wrote in the article that's up at sportstalknetwork.com, a lot of people always say, oh, why can't he talk if he didn't do anything? Why can't he talk? Or why does the defendant always have to say, I can't talk under instruction from my lawyers? Well, if you saw the interview with Bob Costas, which was played for the jury, where Costas asked him if he, you know, if he was attracted to young boys, underage boys, sexually attracted, and that long pause, which might in reality have been, I don't know, 2 or 3 seconds, seemed like an hour. To me, that sealed Jerry Sandusky with this jury. That was played for the jury. That's why. There's a good example of why you don't let your client talk when he's under investigation and or under indictment. You'll never get a better example. So that certainly hurt him in the eyes of the jury. I don't think there's anything this lawyer can do, the defense lawyer. Joe Amendola, I don't think there's anything he can do. Maybe plead insanity, but I don't even think they're going to buy that, because if you're insane, you don't really understand what you're doing. And this guy was writing letters to these kids after the fact. It seems like he clearly understood what he was doing and clearly understood it was wrong. Remember early on when that mother confronted him and he came to her house and he apologized? He said, I don't know what got into me. I want to kill myself. I know you won't forgive me. There were detectives in the next room. So all of that, if necessary, will come out. But whatever, I think the defense is rearranging deck chairs on the Titanic. I think Sandusky's going down. That's no big news flash. The lessons to be learned here is what you do with your client. Would it have made a difference if he had never said anything? Well, it would have made a little difference. The little difference being he wouldn't have said things that hurt him. You know, it's the old anything you say can and will be used against you. Well, he voluntarily went on with Bob Costas. And that certainly was devastating testimony when they played that tape. Again, that pause might only be 2 seconds, seemed like an hour. If someone asks you, are you sexually attracted to young boys, and you don't say no immediately, there's something wrong with you. So we'll see what happens. We'll keep an eye on both of those cases, the Clemens case ending, the Sandusky case, the jury, the prosecution rested, and the defense is going to start its case today. I think the Clemens jury comes back tomorrow. We'll keep an eye on those two cases for you during the week. Now to Major League Baseball. Again, another interleague week. Hottest team in baseball right now, without question, the New York Yankees. The Nationals got a little understanding of what the Yankees are all about as the Yankees go into Washington and sweep the Nationals. The Yankees have now won 9 games in a row. They've swept 3 3-game series. They're 40-25. They have the second-best record in baseball. I think they're right behind the Dodgers now. This is what the Yankees can do. And yesterday, Granderson hits his 21st homer of the year. Robbie Cano hits his 12th of the year. Granderson now 21-40 RBIs. Cano 12-31 RBIs. Teixeira got his 39th RBI. Teixeira is 3-for-4 yesterday, but still only hitting .252. A lot of debate in New York as Teixeira lost it. I don't know that he's lost it. He still plays Gold Glove first base, and he hits for pretty good power. But what he has lost is his ability to hit for average. I don't know if it's the Tampa Bay shift. I don't know if it got into his head. But he's now, you know, all of April, all of May, over half of June, he's hitting .252. I think he hit in the .250s and the .240s his last two seasons. So I think clearly Teixeira, average-wise, is down a legit 25, 30 points. I think it's partly the shift. I think Tampa Bay is revolutionizing baseball as we watch it, as we've discussed earlier this year, first series of the year. with computers and easy to collect data. I mean, it's just you could shift for virtually every batter. And I think Tampa Bay almost does that. A lot of teams don't. But I think Tampa Bay, if nine guys get up, I bet you they have some kind of shift on five or six guys, and someday they'll have a shift on nine guys. Yesterday, Yankees 4, Nationals 1, Ivan Nova, unbelievable on the road, 7 2/3, 7 hits, 1 run earned. He's 9-2 with a 4.32 ERA, which means it's good to be a Yankee. Soriano gets his 13th save. Interesting point on Soriano, he has an opt-out clause at the end of this year, and you knew he would never opt out when he was a setup man, but now he's a closer. And Mariano probably done for the year, or I think definitely done for the year. So Soriano might want more money in more years after the end of this season. He may opt out if he keeps pitching like this. 13 saves and a 1.78 ERA. Yesterday in the 9th, 3 up, 3 down. Now he's got a 3-1 lead. You know, I think there should be stats, 1-run saves, 2-run saves, 3-run saves. You know, when you come in the game, it's a lot different pitching 2-1 than it is pitching 4-1. But the Yankees get the job done. They sweep the Nationals. You know, Bryce Harper had, like, the worst game ever for a teenager. You heard that over the weekend. 0-for-7, 5 strikeouts. And I'll tell you what, one of them was a nasty pitch from Pettit. Close pitch. You know, who's getting the close call? 40-year-old Andy Pettit, borderline Hall of Famer, or brash rookie Bryce Harper? Well, you know who got the call. So Harper banged his bat on the ground, screamed at the ump. I'm shocked they didn't throw him out, but they didn't. Harper yesterday, 2-for-4. He's batting .294 for the year. I don't even think he's the best rookie right now. We'll get to that in a minute. But he is playing very well. He's going to be a super-duper star. But again, he's got to keep his head. Obviously, that's really important when you're a young player, or an old player for that matter. Yesterday for the Yankees, Grandison with 2 hits, hitting .257. Cano, including a home run. Cano with 2 hits, including a home run, hitting an even .300. Teixeira with 3 hits, as we said, only hitting .252. Stewart, the catcher, has been surprising offensively. You know, they sent Cervelli down because Stewart had no options, and Cervelli did. Cervelli, a well-liked guy on the Yankees, in the clubhouse with the fans, but Stewart has done a very good job. And although they say he's supposedly Stewart was going to be a stopgap, he plays a lot. He's very good. He's obviously behind Russell Martin, but Cervelli is probably still stewing in the minor leagues because Stewart going 2-for-4 yesterday, hitting .259, it's far more than what the Yankees hoped for. The Yankees obviously took Stewart, 30 years old, excellent defensive catcher. But he's got some big hits for the Yankees this year. He gets 2 more yesterday, batting .259, which is surprisingly high. And think about it, he's hitting 7 points higher than Mark Teixeira. For Washington, Harper got 2 hits. LaRoche, 2-for-4. With an RBI and a home run. LaRoche hitting .264, but having a good year. He's got 12 homers now, 43 RBIs. Edwin Jackson takes the loss. He's 3-4 with a 3.02 ERA. Pitched well yesterday. 6 innings, 7 hits, 2 runs, both earned. But he takes the loss. Yankees 4, Nationals 1. Yankees 40-25. Nationals still doing well, 38-26 after being swept. Few other games to take a look at. The Rays shut out the Marlins 3-0. Cobb gets the win. He's 3-3. Went 7 innings. No earned runs. No runs at all. Johnson takes the loss. You know, Josh Johnson's been a disappointment. He's now 4-5 with a 4.18 ERA. Didn't pitch bad yesterday. 6 innings pitched. 8 hits, 2 runs, both earned. He does give up a home run to B.J. Upton, Upton's fifth of the year. And the Rays get the job done. Rays 3, Marlins nothing. Miami now a 500 team, which everyone thought they'd be better. Tampa Bay 37-29, still up there in the AL East. For Miami, only 2 hits. Sanchez got a hit. Dobbs, the DH, got a hit. So, again, Cobb was very, very good. And they just keep taking out these great young pitchers. Then Peralta comes in and pitches the eighth. Rodney gets his 19th save. He's got 19 saves. scoreless ninth, two strikeouts. He's got a 1.14 ERA. So I don't know how Joe Maddon does it with the bullpen, but he does it. Rays 3, Marlins nothing. A few other games to look at quickly. Orioles still surprising, 39-27. They shut out the Atlanta Braves. Orioles 2, Braves nothing. Chen, who's been a very pleasant surprise for the Orioles, now 7-2, seven innings of shutout ball, has a 3.36 ERA. Delgado takes the loss for the Braves. He's 4-7, but he only gave up two earned runs in eight innings. For Baltimore, Adam Jones, 2-for-3, having a heck of a year. He's batting 311. The Orioles only got four hits, but they won the game. Obviously, that's what counts. For Atlanta, Simmons, the shortstop, 2-for-3, hitting 333. The only player to get more than one hit for the Braves. Orioles, 2. Braves, nothing. Orioles, 39-27. Atlanta in the tough NL East, 35-31. Obviously, the AL East has shown its, in my eyes anyway, it's better than the NL East. The only team with a record better than the Yankees is the Dodgers, 42-25 as they win again yesterday. They score one in the ninth to tie, one in the tenth to win, as they beat the White Sox 2-1. D. Gordon got the game-winning walk-off, as they like to say, single to right in the bottom of the 10th to win the game. I'm very impressed with D. Gordon. His numbers aren't great, but he battles. 2-for-5 yesterday. He's only hitting 236, but I think he's playing shorty. He's going to be a very good player. Herrera, the left fielder, goes 3-for-4. He's hitting 305. They're doing all this without Matt Kemp, by the way. So give them a lot of credit. Capuano pitched very well for the Dodgers. Eight innings, only one run, but he gets a no decision. Belisario gets the win in relief. He's now 3-0, two innings of shutout ball. For Chicago, Quintana pitched great. Eight innings, five hits, no runs. But Reed blows the save, and Thornton takes the loss. He's now 2-5. Dodgers' best record in baseball, 42-25, 2. White Sox 1. White Sox 4 games over 500. They're 35-31. Last game to take a look at quickly. The Angels beat the Diamondbacks 2-0. Richards gets the win. He's 2-0. Eight shutout innings. Kennedy takes the loss. Cy Young Award last year, 5-7 with a 4.13 ERA this year. Only gave up two earned runs. Takes the loss. He's the hard luck loser. Complete game loss. Frieri gets his save, his seventh of the year. Arizona 32-34. The Angels coming back now 36-31. Some guy named Albert Pujols hit his 10th home run of the year. But the guy I wanted to talk about is Trout, the left fielder. Some people think he's better than Bryce Harper. He's a rookie. He's hitting 324. Got his 27th RBI yesterday after a double. Pujols got his 38th RBI with that home run. Trout batting leadoff, hitting 324 for the Angels. I think right now, based on the field stuff, he's the rookie of the year. Let's go quickly to the standings. The Yankees now have pulled off to a game and a half lead over Baltimore. Tampa 3.5 out. Toronto and Boston way back now. White Sox in first, a game and a half over Cleveland. Detroit 3 out. Kansas City 5 out. Twins way back. Texas 40-27, second best record in the AL, 4 over the Angels. Oakland and Seattle way back. The NL East, as we talked about, interesting. Washington, despite being swept, 38-26, they lead Atlanta by 4, the Mets by 4.5, Miami by 6, and Philly, you know, where are they going with no right side of the infield and no Halliday? They're 31-37, 9 games out. Cincinnati leads the Central 38-27. Pittsburgh 4 out. St. Louis 5 out. Milwaukee 8.5 out. Far back to Houston and Chicago. Dodgers' best record in baseball, 42-25. 5 up on the Giants. 9 up on Arizona. Colorado and San Diego already way out of it. Not a whole lot tonight. Your national ESPN game, Braves at Yankees, 7 o'clock Eastern on ESPN. Other things, if you're into the College Baseball World Series, ESPN2 at 5 o'clock and 9 o'clock, Kent State versus Florida at 5 Eastern, Arkansas versus South Carolina 9 Eastern, and we rarely do the soccer, but there's not much going on today at 2:30 Eastern, two games, Croatia against Spain on ESPN, Italy against Ireland on ESPN2, that's the UEFA Euro 2012. This is the Steve Callis Show, we're at SportsTalkNetwork.com.